October 31st, 2012, Vrindavan, India, Nectar of Devotion, Chapter 17, Part 1. Okay, so Bhava Bhakti, it's quite interesting if we look at the eligibility of Bhava Bhakti, especially contrasting it with the eligibility for Raghunuga Bhakti. Because remember, the eligibility for Raghunuga Bhakti is an Arjuna Vritti. And Srila Prabhupada talks about being free from material contamination and being liberated. But Bhava Bhakti, you have to be in the mode of goodness. I don't think I wrote that. Which I should write down. This is actually eligibility. This is. You have to have come to Sudasattva. And how is it described here? When a devotee is purified from the sun, from his pure heart, there is a diffusion of ecstatic love which is more glorious than the sunshine. By the process of executing regulated devotional service, one is actually elevated unto the transcendental stage beyond the material modes of nature. At that time, one's heart becomes illuminated like the sun. So what does that tell you about eligibility for Raghunuga Bhakti? Somebody in Raghunuga Bhakti, are they totally above the modes of material nature? No. Although Prabhupada used the word liberated. But at Bhava Bhakti, one's above the modes of material nature. Now one is in the transcendental position. Now this illumination like the sun is different from the illumination of material sattva-gun. Because in material sattva-gun, there's also the nine gates of the body. You've studied all this in Bhagavad Gita? Yes? The nine gates of the body are all illumined by knowledge. But that comes and goes. One who does not hate illumination, attachment, or delusion when they appear, nor long for them, then they disappear is above the modes of material nature. You've done chapter 14 already? Yes? So that kind of illumination, attachment, and delusion, that comes and goes. Sometimes we feel illuminated. Sometimes we feel attached. Sometimes we feel deluded. That's sattva-gun. This illumination of bhava that makes you eligible for bhava-bhakti is constant. It's not mixed with rajas and tamas. It's above rajas and tamas. We should also mention, in the purport to Gita 14:22-25, Prabhupada says, as long as one has a material body, the material body and mind are going to be affected by goodness, passion, and ignorance. But one should be above the modes and be neutral. So at Bhava Bhakti, one is above the modes and one is neutral. One's heart is always illuminated, even though one's body may be going through the modes of material nature. Is that clear or is it not clear? That's a very difficult concept. Yes?
What do you really mean by other modes of material that is not, the mind is not affected?
Yes. You're not affected.
The mind is affected.
A mind and body will be affected. You're not affected. You've realized that fifth chapter and 13th chapter, that you're an observer. Remember this, right, from the Gita? You're an observer. The body is walking, speaking, whatever, evacuating, and you're not doing anything at all. You're an observer. So you may see that the body and mind go through illumination, attachment, and delusion. But it's not you. You're not affected by it. It doesn't affect you.
That is self-realization.
Is that self-realization? Self-realization is starting as soon as you have some awakening of an attachment for Krishna. Full self-realization isn't there until you have full Swarup Siddhi. Just like Prabhupada talking about Raghunuga Bhakti, that is something, it's gradual. You gradually realize yourself. So I've made the comparison many times to turning from a child to an adult. At a certain point, you can say, okay, now you're an adult. But it's gradual, like our Tushti here. Is she a child or is she an adult? You can't really say, correct? You can say she's a child, but she's not really a child. Like I have my 14-year-old grandson with me, and I asked one devotee whether or not he could do some service in that devotee's department, and the devotee said, we don't let young children come in the department. Thank goodness I never showed that to my grandson. He would have been very insulted. So a 14-year-old is not a young child. But are they a child? Well, sort of. Are they an adult? Well, sort of. So, you know, there's degrees of self-realization. Like, there's degrees of God-realization.
Yeah. So in bhava, the mind is affected. But below bhava also...
Well, the mind is dissolving. But the mind and body are still... Prabhupada says as long as you have a material body, it's going to be affected by the modes of nature.
Okay, so in bhava, it has affected the least.
You're not affected. You know you're different. Your consciousness, and we'll get to the next thing in a minute, your consciousness is not in goodness, passion, or ignorance. What are we talking about? I'm sure we're talking about here. How you can be in a place but not be in a place. Weren't we talking about that here? No? Someplace else? Where was I? I was talking about that. I was talking about how I was in New York and we were saying how I was happy I didn't live there. That wasn't here? Okay, well, I'll tell you that then, if it wasn't here. So we were in Brooklyn, in Henry Street, in the temple. And the local residents would be out in the summertime, and they'd open up the fire hydrants. And so the streets were flooded with water. Didn't I tell you that
yet?
Yeah, I thought I told you here. And I was walking to the subway, and I looked at my friend, and I said, I'm glad I don't live here. And she said, but you do live here. But I didn't feel like I lived there. I didn't feel like I lived there. I wasn't identifying with the place. I wasn't identifying with the people. It was there. So you're not identifying with the body, not identifying with what's happening in the body. Your transcendental heart is illumined like the sun. And the next is that there's some influx of Vadini Shakti. There's a soft-heartedness. Heart becomes very, very soft. You know, in the Bhagavatam, what is it? 2, 3, 2, 2, 3, 34, something like that. It's that famous verse of that if your heart is steel framed when chanting Hare Krishna. Do you remember the number of that? Maybe it's in here. Oh, 2, 3, 24. Ah, it's right written down here. 2, 3, 24. So if you're chanting Hare Krishna, what's interesting there in that verse, it says if when you're chanting, you cry and you shiver in ecstasy, but your heart doesn't melt. You may even cry. You may be chanting and you're crying and you're shivering, but your heart doesn't melt. So in bhava, your heart's melting. You have any contact with Krishna, your heart just starts to melt. So these are the signs of eligibility for bhava. Yes?
Is there any ecstasy?
Yes, we'll get... Yes. Yes.
Doesn't the heart melt until the stage of bhava? Isn't there stages before that?
Yes.
One can...
I keep saying this, and I could say it 1,000 times. The stages are not boxes. They're not boxes. We're trying to describe in a linear, verbal, box-like fashion something that's individual and organic. And by organic, I don't mean biological. I mean having to do with life. We're talking about the evolution of a relationship of love. And we're trying to do that in language and terms and categories. Are they going to be adequate? They can't be adequate. if you think that the development of love is some kind of a mechanical, mathematical formula, like chemistry or physics, you're doing some sort of chemical reaction, and at this temperature you're going to see this chemical reaction, and at this temperature you're going to see this chemical reaction. And if you think you can understand bhakti like that, Krishna's a person and we're a person. We're talking about a development of a loving relationship. So, no, you can't put it into little boxes like that. There's some amount of prema in Adushraddha. There's some degree of love. Prabhupada talked about that. What's your qualification? You have some love for Krishna. In the beginning bhakti, you have some love for Krishna. You have some attraction for Krishna. So there's some aspects of all the higher stages and the lower stages. And there may be, and I talked about this before, when you're going, this is all analogies though. If you're going on a journey, sometimes on the journey you come to a point where you can see your destination even though it's very far away. Somehow the road turns in such a way that you can see far ahead. Correct? And then again it turns and you can't see it anymore. Or sometimes in the middle of the night you wake up and you're wide awake. And then you go back to sleep. Sometimes in the winter there's a very warm day. So sometimes even for a neophyte there may be some glimpse. We'll get to that also today as far as shadow and reflective ecstasy. But there can be some glimpse. Why not? First of all, Krishna wants to induce us. And so sometimes he may show this is what it's like. Otherwise, like Robert says, until nista, it's a hard struggle with determination. How are you going to keep going? Unless there's some little idea. Yes. Yes. Oh, you don't have to ask me for that. Just, I like air, so yeah.
Sorry? I'm gonna fall asleep.
You can stand up.
Yeah, I know, but...
Yeah, afternoon is hard. At least it's not quite so hot. No, we have a problem with air. Definitely, this room has an air problem. Okay, does that answer your question?
Yes.
Similarly, you may see aspects of lower stages in people who are at higher stages, which Prabhupada also talks about in this section. You may see both. You may see aspects... Oh, that's much better. You may... Thank you for wanting that. You may see aspects of higher stages in someone at a lower stage and aspects of lower stages at someone in a higher stage. Sometimes it's a very fleeting thing, and sometimes a person is just developing in an uneven fashion. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur talks about this in terms of nishta. We talked about this before, that you can be steady in what?
Determination.
Good guess. But no, sorry. But good guess. Thank you. Body.
Mind.
Speech. And there's another one. Your good qualities. Remember, that's one of the aspects of the of Shubhada auspiciousness, is that you develop good qualities automatically. We talked about courage and fearfulness. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says you can be steady in body, you can be steady in mind, you can be steady in speech, and you can be steady in good qualities. He says generally first you're steady in body, then in speech, then in mind. But he said not always. Some people might be steady in their mind first. Isn't that interesting? Some people might be always thinking of Krishna, but they still talk nonsense. Sometimes. And sometimes they don't wake up until 8 in the morning. Isn't that interesting? And they may still display some bad qualities, but they're always thinking of Krishna. Because that you can go in different ways. So generally we think, okay, first a person's steady in their bodily activities, then they're talking about Krishna, then they're thinking about Krishna. And he said you can be steady in good qualities and not be steady in bhakti, but that's not considered real steadiness. But he said if you're steady in bhakti and not in good qualities, that's considered good. That's considered steadiness. Fascinating, isn't it? Now, at a certain point, you have to become steady in everything, of course, but you may not become steady in everything altogether on the same instant. It's not okay. Wow, I just got steady in body, mind, word, speech, and all good qualities all in the same 2 seconds. You know, it may not happen like that. In fact, it probably won't happen like that. So you are going to meet other people who are steady in one thing and not something else. Oh, no. And be careful. Be careful. Because what are you going to focus on? If you focus on what they're steady in, you may think they're more advanced than they are. And if you focus on what they're unsteady in, you may think they're less advanced than they are. Be careful. Make sense?
Mm-hmm. Especially when you know, when you deal with reality and you try to measure people.
Yeah. Or even trying to measure yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, we're learning this to some extent so we can say, okay, where am I? And it's good to know where you are. But in another sense, you know, there is some meaning to saying, wow, okay, what am I ready for? Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Bhaktiloka Niyamagraha, one of my favorite sections of any book, is he talks about how there's different rules for different stages. Right now, and this has happened before, but right now it's particularly flaring. Like in Hawaii on the island where I have my office, there's a volcano that's always active. So I remember writing on Facebook, we're going to Rathiatra in Volcano, and somebody wrote, in a volcano? I'm like, yeah, that's the name of the town, Volcano. Why do they call it Volcano? Well, it's right by the volcano. Is it an active volcano? Yeah, it's an active volcano. It's always active. And you're going to Rathiatra there? I said, yeah, people live there. So there's a volcano there that's constantly active. It's constantly active, constantly flowing. Now I got lost. Where was I? Take me back.
We're talking about the current volcano in the cell.
You were trying to talk about the different rules for different.
Oh, okay. Thank you. So there's this volcano in ISKCON about the relationship of Varnashram to ISKCON and ISKCON devotees. It's always active. There's always people saying, you know, everybody should follow Varnam. It's always erupting. But sometimes there's a big eruption. Sometimes there's a particularly big, like right now in Hawaii, there's a lake of lava. That doesn't happen very often. It's always something. But so right now, this particular moment in ISKCON, there's a group of devotees who are really saying everybody has to follow Varnashram and nobody should just surrender to Krishna, because if you surrender to Krishna without following Varnashram, you're sinful. And interesting things like that. So for people on a certain level, the rules of Varnashram apply. If you're in a certain level, you have to follow the rules of Varnashram. If you're at a higher level and you follow the rules of Varnashram, you're falling. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says you can fall if you go too fast, and you can fall if you go too slowly. And he said that if you remain attached to the rules of a lower level when you're at a higher level, then those act like chains around your feet. Srila Prabhupada would particularly quote this in reference to people who were attached to being a Christian or a Hindu or a Jew or something like that. You say, chant Hare Krishna. No, I can't. I'm a Christian. And he'd say, this is like chains around your feet. So my point is, we do have to have some idea what level we're on so we can know what practice to follow. So you can know, do I follow the practices of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti or Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti? Am I ready for the practices of Bhava Bhakti? You have to know that. I mean, you don't have to know that, but it would be very helpful. So it's a good idea to have some idea where we're on, but you'll find it quite difficult to put yourself into a box. Really find it quite difficult to put yourself in a box. Because we're individuals and we don't neatly fit into boxes. We just don't. It's not the way reality is. Yes.
Isn't it that the Vadi Bhakti will converge into a Raga Yoga?
Not necessarily, no. No, not necessarily. No. You can become a pure devotee in Vaidhi Bhakti and never touch Raganuga Bhakti at all. And then where will you go? Where will you go? Vaikuntha, parts of Dwarka, even parts of Vrindavan. Yes?
I thought you mentioned in the beginning of this devotional class that you could do it in 3 seconds.
That's true.
So then that contradicts what you just said about going up too high. And you just said something about reaching a really high level.
Can you reach a really high level very quickly? Yes, it's possible. Because we're all eternally spirit soul, we're all pure. If you fully surrender to Krishna right this second, you can become fully pure right this second. Did Prabhupada say that a lot? Yes. Will most people do it like that? No. So, if I want to walk from here to the Krishna Balaram temple, and I walk out of the VIHE, and I go that way, will I make it to the temple?
No.
No. So you always have to know where you are in order to know which step to take. If you take a step that's too far ahead of you, if you pretend that you're further ahead than you are, you'll go the wrong way. If you say, I'm actually in Bhava Bhakti, but you're not. If you're at Adushraddha and you try to act like you're in Bhava Bhakti, you won't get anywhere because you're going the wrong way. Can you go very quickly through the stages? Definitely. Do most people? No. We could talk about why. I see the general reason why, as what Prabhupada said earlier, we don't want to clean the dust from the heart. We're afraid of so many things, and our fears need to be dealt with slowly for most of us. Just is what it is. The point is, don't imitate a higher level than you're on. Going very quickly doesn't mean you're imitating a higher level, it just means you're running up the stairs. You can run up the stairs, but don't pretend you're on the stair higher than you're on. And don't remain attached to the rules of the lower stair when you're at a higher stair. So for that reason, if you can all follow my logic here, for that reason, we have to have some idea of what stage we're on. However, it's very difficult to say, I'm exactly at this stage. That's not such an easy thing to say. You can notice, okay, I don't have very many anarthas left, and I'm steady in speech, and I'm steady in my qualities, and I'm steady in mind, but I'm not steady in body. Am I anista or not? I don't know. You follow?
Yeah, but you're the expert, you should know.
That reminds me when I had one of my students who was 8 years old. I wrote something on the board, and I said, oops, I made a mistake. And she said, you're a devotee, you're not supposed to make a mistake. So you can speak in a general way about what stage you are on or somebody else is on, but be careful because it's not so cut and dried. So let me jump to the last part of this chapter then, and then we'll take a break. So the very last part of these two chapters, Srila Prabhupada talks about, well, what does he talk about at the very last part of chapter 18? You can open up your books and find it for yourself. What does he talk about? Spots on the moon. What a surprising thing he says here. What in the world does this mean? If a person is completely detached from material enjoyment and has developed pure ecstatic devotion, even if he is sometimes accidentally found not living up to the standard of devotional service, one should not be envious of him. A devotee has unflinching faith, devotion to the Lord, even if sometimes found to be accidentally deviated from pure devotional characteristics, should still be counted among the pure. What? This is about Baba Bhakti. What did we start out saying? That the eligibility for Baba Bhakti was what?
Goodness.
Goodness, pure goodness. Not just goodness, pure goodness. Heart like the sun. And now we're talking about spots on the moon? And we're talking about deviated from pure devotional characteristics? Not living up to the standard of devotional service? What? Huh? How does this relate to what I was just talking about?
Moving too fast.
It's a process, so in some aspects maybe it already developed to that stage, and in some aspects not yet.
Did everybody hear that?
Yeah.
Because it's a process, and it's a process that develops differently for each individual, there may be an individual that is in bhava, but there's still something. In fact, if there's a year in bhava, there is still something, because there's still something until prema. But there may be sometimes a gross something that comes out. Even at bhava. What's the example in the Shastra? It's not given here. What's the example in the Shastra? Jad Bharat. Bharat Maharaj. He was in bhava. And a gross something came out. He got attached to an animal. He gave up attachment to a kingdom, wife, children, power, influence, money. The way that you, after you pass stool, you flush the toilet. You don't look in the toilet. Oh, my nice stool. That was the example. He just walked away from it. And then he became attached to an animal. Out of this mood that I'm the king, I have to protect the citizens, and here's this deer, it's dependent on me. So he still had a little...
So he was attached to the rules and regulations of the...
He still had a little, yeah. He still had a little upadi. That I'm the protector. This was when Sitaram and Lakshman were in the forest, and the sages asked Ramachandra to protect them from the Rakshasas. And Ram said, I give you my word, I will protect you. And then as they're walking, Sita says, I don't mean to question you, my lord, but you're here as an exile. You're here as an ascetic. Bharat is on the throne. Why are you being the protector? You're not acting as the king. It's not your dharma. Why are you vowing to protect the sages? So, of course, Ramchandra said, no, I am still actually the king. Bharat is just my emissary. But this was Bharat Maharaj, Rishabhdev's son. He got in this mood of I'm the king. Here's a citizen of the kingdom that needs my protection. So what did he do? That was a lower platform, wasn't it? That was his, when he was the king, when he was ruling in the kingdom, before he became a vanaprastha, that was his duty. That was his service to Krishna to protect the citizens. But it wasn't his service to Krishna anymore. He was on a different platform. But he was in bhava. But that's like a spot on the moon. I mean, it gave him some trouble. He had to take birth as a deer and then another birth as Jetabharata. It wasn't that there were no consequences. There were consequences, but Prabhupada said we shouldn't be envious of them, of someone. So if someone's in the stage of bhava and they may still exhibit. Another example, of course, is Bilva Mangala Thakur, who had achieved bhava. In one life, he died, he left his body at the stage of bhava. And he took birth in a very, very wealthy Brahmin family to continue his bhakti. But when he took birth in that family, he became bewildered by money. And he became attracted to this one girl, Chintamani. Now again, in that life, he became so elevated that Krishna was personally feeding him. He came to Vrindavan and Krishna was coming to talk to him every day. So it may even happen that in Bhava, even there may be some gross external difficulty that a person still has to go through. That doesn't mean that they're not in Bhava. But generally, if somebody's engaged in gross difficulty, then we can understand they're not even ready for Raganuga Bhakti, what to speak of Bhava Bhakti. I don't think this is an easy thing to sort out. I don't pretend that I'm going to sort it all out here today in 5 minutes, or in 20 minutes, or in 5 hours, or in 5 weeks. But we can say that if somebody's, you know, if they're a debauch, and they say, oh, I'm seeing Krishna, Krishna's talking to me, and, you know, nice you say the holy name of Krishna, I offer you my respects from a distance. But if somebody's very elevated and they have some difficulty, then we don't become envious of them. We don't blaspheme them, and we wait, and Krishna will adjust. And there may be some consequences. Bilva Mangala Thakur had some consequences. Bharat Maharaj had some consequences. It wasn't there was no consequences. But they quickly restored themselves to their position. Yes?
Can I tell a quick little story?
Yes, quickly, and then we need to take a break.
Ananda Prabhu tells that story that happened in Jagannath Puri, supposedly. We don't know when. There was this pujari, and he was very devoutly serving the Lord. And every afternoon, he would just go to the gardens outside, I can't remember that name, next to Ravananda Roy's house, and he would pick flowers, and then he would make garlands. And then one day, he was picking up his flowers, he saw this beautiful lady, and she happened to be a prostitute, let's say, and he became attracted to her, and he followed her, and then he went to sleep in her house, and then the next morning he woke up, oh, Lord Jagannath, and he ran to the temple full speed, and obviously, when he got there, the pujari kicked him out, because he was not in a fit state. So, but then in the afternoon, Lord Jagannath himself spoke to the pujari, where is so-and-so? Where is he? Bring him to me. Because actually, he was just like, he got bewildered for a few hours, and then immediately, you remember, my God, Lord Jagannath, I did not dress him this morning, and he ran.
Now, of course, none of that's an excuse for sinning on the strength of chanting. You can't say, well, I'm a great devotee, I'm going to go drink alcohol and then I'll chant again and it'll be okay. Nor is that an excuse for somebody who's just engaged in all sorts of sinful activities and claiming to be dancing with Radha and Krishna and stuff like that. But the point is that people do make advancement in different areas, and somebody can be, and we'll talk about this also when we get back, we'll talk about the opposite, that somebody can be generally a materialist and genuinely fallen and have a moment of shadow or reflective bhava. Just like somebody who's in bhava may have a moment of bewilderment. So it can happen both ways. Okay, let's take a 10-minute break. Thank you.